Tony Barrell is a documentary maker who's been broadcasting and writing about Japan for 30 years with a particular focus on the nuclear industry. I asked him first about the industry's record of transparency.
It's not been good. This recent occasion is an example of the new regime, if you like, of actually telling people on a blow-by-blow way of what's going on. Well, they had to, really, because that wave and the earthquake were so obviously threatening nuclear power plants on the east coast of Japan that they couldn't very well pretend they weren't happening. Whereas that has been the case on many occasions, including the company that operates those plants.
TEPCO,
Tokyo Electric Power Company. They had to shut down 17 plants in 2003 because they'd been falsifying the records about what had been happening at them. Now, the accidents weren't of a major nature. They weren't anything like what's going on in Fukushima. But they were serious in the sense that lives were threatened, systems broke down, there were failures to report, and there were cover-ups. People pretended things hadn't happened.
I think there were 29 occasions on which this happened, where the falsification of safety incidents.
Yeah, well, shutting down all 17 of its nuclear power plants is quite a revelation as to how serious it was.
Now, on the first day or so, there were people saying that this was the first major accident to happen in the Japanese nuclear industry, was it?
Well, it depends how you define major. It's the first partial meltdown, and that's fair enough. But there have been serious accidents where people have been killed and injured. Maybe one of the most spectacular was the collapse of the cooling system of Japan's first commercial fast breeder reactor, which is on the coast, on the opposite coast to the Pacific coast, over on the Japan seaside, a place called Monju, which in 1995 sprung a leak in its liquid sodium cooling system, which made the whole thing absolutely red hot and had to be shut down immediately, and stayed shut down until the beginning of last year, 15 years.
I believe even at Fukushima, there was some local opposition. There has been quite a lot of local opposition over the years to the nuclear plants. What's the history of opposition to Japanese nuclear plants? And I suppose, where does it come from? Is it particularly, for instance, because of Hiroshima and Nagasaki that people are more sensitive than in other countries?
Well, that's obviously one reason. The other reason, I think, is because the proliferation of nuclear power plants has been sort of so gradual and extensive that it's taken a long time for people to realize just how many of these places there are. They're all built in remote areas, often in multiples, as in Fukushima. There's six in one complex and four in another. Over on the other side of the country, there's a complex of seven. Around Wakasa Bay in the north of Japan, opposite China, there's a complex. Well, they're not actually all in the same compound, but there are 15 within an area of, say, the distance between Wollongong and Sydney, almost as if 15 nuclear power plants were built around Port Phillip Bay. Now, that's the sort of accumulation of anxiety which has driven a very grassroots kind of movement to say, well, wait a minute, we don't want one in our backyard. But in fact, the backyard is always somewhere remote where people actually have little say in what really happens to them. And it's very occasionally you get a grassroots movement that gets together enough support to actually stop something happening.
And has that ever happened?
That did happen in Niigata, which is in northwest Japan. Again, on the seaside, on the shore, they were going to build a nuclear power station there. And the local mayor, Maki, got people to put a petition to him to say, you know, don't build this. He was in favour of them not building it, but he didn't want to sort of act on his own, so he got a referendum up. It had no binding legality, but it did actually mean that the company and the government decided to abandon the idea, which was to build a nuclear power station.
You expect more of that kind of thing to happen?
After this, it's hard to say, but there is quite a serious... It's not taken seriously, the anti-nuclear movement. It's one of those things that's always being marginalised because it seems to be only extremists or NIMBYs who are against nuclear power. There has, in the last few years, been quite a strong movement to suggest that nuclear power is the answer to global warming or climate change, whatever you want to call it. And the Japanese government's actually come out in favour of that as a strategy. So that's a bit up in the air now.
The paradox is that the Fukushima plants are, what, nearly 10% of the nuclear plants in Japan. So their loss will mean a massive loss of power, and that may mean more pressure for more of these plants.
Yeah, I suppose it depends on how many of them actually do go down, because although they're saying, oh, there's no explosion and no danger of a really huge disaster, the plants that are affected could be terminally destroyed. I mean, one of them's definitely finished once it starts melting.
The number one, because it's full of seawater.
It should have been shut down years ago, because it's 40 years old this month.
And the number three, which exploded just this afternoon, that doesn't look like it's going to be very easy to get back. But it could be that the whole compound, because of radiation, is not really usable for quite a long time.
Yeah, and certainly if they're serious about nuclear energy, they will have to replace them. But, you know, you can't build a nuclear power station overnight. Neither can you decommission one. There's one further south in Tokai, which was the very first power station built. It's taking 17 years to decommission it. That's how long an old nuclear reactor takes to settle down after it's been shut down.
Tony Barrell, documentary maker and frequent visitor to Japan, reporting on the nuclear industry.